Welcome, and thank you for standing by. All participants will be on listen-only until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. I would also like to remind you that the conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd like to turn the call over to our first speaker, Ms. Victoria McGuire. Ma'am, you may begin.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tanya. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Tivoli Talk session. Today, we will present an overview of the changes to the agreement for the 2009 Tivoli FCT Support Provider Reseller Program. My name is Victoria McGuire, as was mentioned, and I work in IBM's Tivoli Channel Integration Group. My role is to integrate the resellers of acquired companies into IBM's reseller programs. Joining me today are Carl Thomason and Dominic Heed. Carl is the worldwide subscription and support sales leader for Maximo, NetCool, and Valent. Dominic is the worldwide business partner manager for Tivoli Support. Also joining us is Michelle Calvillo, my colleague in the Tivoli Channel Integration Group, and Sarah Molnar in our enablement organization. In the invitation email, contained the URL where you can download the presentation. In case you did not see this information, you may email Sarah Molnar to obtain it. Her email address is smolnar, S-M-O-L-N-A-R, at us.ibm.com. This session will be recorded, as Tanya mentioned, so that you may listen to the replay at your convenience. So if you now turn to page 2 of the presentation, you will see the topics we plan to cover today. First, go over why we're making these changes. Then we will give an overview of the changes to the FCT program. There will be changes that Carl will cover that are specific to the subscription and support, and there are changes that Dominic will cover about the requirements for providing support. We'll cover at the end a call to action. I will give you contact information for various folks in the worldwide organization, and we will open that up for any questions that you may have at the end of this call. So, why did we make this change? We had several acquisitions that we were still working with the original agreements from those companies. Those acquired agreements had terms dating back to 1999 and didn't accurately reflect the program as we have it today. There were various discount structures for different partners, and it also included a non-support offering. When we reviewed these programs, we understood that we needed to make changes in order to drive increased efficiencies, as well as to ensure that we treated all of our partners on an equal basis. The new program only includes support providing partners, and this contract is worldwide. So the terms are standard around the world. All non-support providing partners have been invited to join partners, since that is IBM's premier method and program for our resellers of IBM's distributed software. So today we will be covering some of the changes that you will see in this new standardized agreement. We move now to page 4. These are some of the more obvious or biggest changes that you will note. The discounts will be based on IBM's list price for new licenses as well as the list price for subscription and support. For NetCool partners, this should not represent a change. However, for our Maximo partners, in new license, again, that should not be a change for you, but subscription and support discounts are changing to this new structure of list discount off of list price for the SNS. Level 2 support providers. In NetCool, we already had provision for Level 1 and Level 2 support providers. However, in Maximo, this will be a new area that you would be able to apply to. So while you could have been a Level 1 support provider in the original program, you are now able to apply to the Level 2 program so long as you meet all of the criteria of that level of support. Certification. For both NetCool and Maximo, there is a new test that is required, and that test is the Tivoli Support Provider Tools and Process Certified Resource. In both programs, we also require you to have the IBM Certified Deployment Specialist. The second certification was available for both NetCool and Maximo. This new program standardizes the number of resources that need to be certified for this program. Payment terms. For both NetCool and Maximo, we have moved to IBM's standard payment terms of due upon receipt and late at 30 days past. For the new license and subscription and support discounts, the discounts are now aligned based on what support level your company is providing and within a given country or territory that you are operating in. And this is a change for both the NetCool and Maximo partners. That is a basic overview of the changes across the agreement. We are now going to turn it over so that Carl Thomason can give you an overview of the changes in the area of subscription and support.
Thank you, Victoria. This is Carl, everyone. Thanks for joining. As Victoria mentioned, what we're doing here is standardizing so we can be consistent. That's really the theme here. And as Victoria also mentioned, there is a standardized pricing model in terms of how renewals are priced across the globe. It's list price minus the contractual discount amount. Now, the contract itself doesn't cover all of the scenarios that are out in the market right now. So what we've done is we've put together a set of business policies to address those areas that the contract doesn't specifically mention. So on slide 6, there are three scenarios that have come up that are pretty general in terms of renewal scenarios, and I'm going to take you through each one. The first one is, as a partner, I did the renewal last year under the old contract. I'm under this new contract now. What does that mean? Does that mean my price goes up to whatever list minus the discount is? And the answer is no. Whatever, from a renewal perspective, the renewal's done last year. It's basically business as usual, which is whatever the renewal price was last year plus standardized 10% uplift year to year, that will continue. Or whatever the list price minus the discount is, whatever is lower. In some cases, the pricing under the new contract might be lower, so we will give you that advantage and charge you that. So we'll charge you the lower of the two. In most cases, it will be what was charged last year plus 10%. So that's the first major point, operationally, that comes up under the new contract. The second is if an end user who was previously renewed direct with IBM and requests to bid up the renewal through a partner. So what is the scenario under that? Again, the contract doesn't specifically address that, so we've created a policy to be uniform across the globe here. And it's really kind of a two-step process. The first is we need to have verification that the end user wants a partner to have a quote. So the end user must, authorize us to quote the partner, let us know. This ensures that, the business doesn't get out of hand with partners and everybody else requesting quotes on it. So the end user is the first step here in requesting. The second, in terms of the pricing, we'll quote whatever partner the same price as we quote the end user direct, or the contractual discount minus the list price, whichever is lower. In some cases, the contract or the list price minus the contractual discount may be lower in some cases, but we'll do whatever is lowest. The third scenario is an end user renewed through a business partner, an incumbent partner, and the end user would like to open up a series of bids for whatever reason to new partners. So what is the pricing in that scenario? And it's, again, two-step process like before. First of all, where the end user needs to let us know, IBM, that to quote new partners other than the incumbent partner. And the pricing to the incumbent or to the new partners will be basically the list price minus our contractual discount. That's what the pricing will be for all new partners in that scenario. Now that's our policy, that's our standard. Now each deal may have particular circumstances. Every renewal may have specific nuances that we may have to work kind of one-off, and we'll work with the end user and the partner community to resolve and work through those. But these scenarios are, again, our policy to address kind of the gaps in the contract that that the contract doesn't address right now. So at the end of the call, I understand there's a chance for Q&A, and we can you can have a chance to ask questions after the call. For now, what I'd like to do is turn it over to Dominic Heed to talk about Tivoli support. Dominic?
Thank you, Carl, and hello, everyone. So first of all, I just want to give you an overview of what I'll be discussing today. So if we move to slide 8, the new requirements state that meet the technical skills and certification requirements to remain eligible for participation in the FCT program. So what we'll be looking for is that, as discussed before, you have a Tivoli Tools and Process certification for your support engineers. So anyone who's in contact with IBM support would have this certification. We'd also expect and require that the engineers have the Tivoli deployment certification for the products that you're supporting. Now, discounts are available for the certification exam, and on the slide here you'll see the details for the US and Canada. In EMEA, you can actually contact myself. My contact details are at the back of the slide, at the deck. And in Asia-Pac, you can contact the Asia-Pac South Channel Operations Team for discount information. The contract now clearly describes the Level 1 and Level 2 requirements that you'll provide, and also the support from IBM in regards to Level 3 support to your teams. The new requirement as well is that the engineers that you have will be English proficient. So what that means is that all contact with the Level 2 support in IBM will be through English, and that is either required when you're verbally speaking to the engineers or via ESR when you're sending updates into the tool. We move on to slide 9. So this gives you kind of a high-level overview of the contract. So So we will expect that every support provider to have an internal electronic call management system for both level 1 and level 2, so that you track the call history and information from the customers that you're working with in regards to the IBM products that you're supporting, so that if you then do need to escalate an issue to IBM, you have the call history available to submit to IBM at that time. We're expecting that you have an SLA in line with IBM standards 24/7 support, so that is for severity 2 through 3 and 4, 5x8 support, and for critical situations, severity 1, that you're available 24/7. We're also expecting that you're staffed to ensure coverage to your end users. We do not stipulate how many engineers that you have for your coverage or, you know, for volume, but we expect that you are staffed to cover your end users at in regards to the SLA that we expect you to provide. That you have also hardware and software available to run tests. So for level 1, you know, we'd expect you to have the software installed so that you can understand the customer's situation. For level 2, we'd expect you to run through tests and reproduce the issue using, you know, best effort. Again, as I've stipulated before, that your engineers, when they're speaking with level 2, are proficient in English. And also, we'd be looking for you to contribute as well knowledge to the Tivoli support site. So where you are solving issues yourself, independently of IBM, we are losing today visibility of those issues. So we would also like you to contribute to the IBM support site, and we will be publishing in the near future instructions on how to do so. Again, the tools and process certification is a requirement for level 1 and level 2, and the deployment certifications for support staff. So where you may have your service engineers certified today, we're also expecting any engineers who are certified to provide support are certified as well. And then really the clear differentiator between level 1 and level 2 is that your level 2 support desk is expected to use best efforts to reproduce the customer issue. We appreciate that not in all cases that is going to be the case, but that is the mindset that you have when you receive a customer issue. Okay, if you move on to slide 10, this just gives you an overview of all the certifications that are available for the product at this stage. We don't expect you for each pillar to have all the certifications, but we would expect if you're supporting a customer with that version of the product that you are certified, and that you have any engineer who contacts level 2 support is certified in that product. And of course, again, the Tivoli support provider tools and process certification is required for any engineer working with the level 2 support team in IBM. At the bottom of the slide, you'll see the details of where you can actually get further information on this, the actual details and requirements of the new tools and process certification, the enablement roadmaps for all the certifications that are required, and also information on product-specific accreditations can be found also using the links provided. Okay, if we move on to slide 11, this is really quite a detailed description of the engineer's roles and responsibilities for a level 1 engineer providing support. I won't go into all the detail here, and you can do this so at your leisure after the call, but the idea is that a level 1 support provider would, at the minimum, really review the issue from a customer and look to see if there is a known solution to that problem, i.e. through the IBM support site, through the documentation, through fix packs that are available through the IBM support site. They're looking to see if an issue has already been resolved. Also looking at simple things in regards to the installation of the product, you know, is the customer using the right software, etc., the right versions. Now if we move on to slide 12, just really to understand the problem, and then also as they receive the actual issue from the customer, simple things that, you know, if you're a support provider today that you would understand, really just writing that down clearly, understanding the error messages that you're seeing from the customer, and then if required, if you haven't been able to resolve the issue yourself, escalating that issue to IBM using the ESR tool in English. On to slide 13, this really gives you a high level, you know, view of the level 2 role and responsibilities. What we're looking here is for more of an in-depth investigation by your support engineers, looking at the actual error log files, putting products into debug, actually understanding how the actual product is installed, looking to either to have to restart processes, gathering configuration files so that in order for you to reproduce the issues in your lab environment yourself. So what we're looking here is you to, in some respects, replace the level 2 role from the IBM support team. So you're actually kind of really working as a partner to the level 2 team in the IBM and actually trying to really understand how to reproduce the customer issue. At the point where you do reproduce the customer issue, to actually write down the steps of how you've done that, provide, you know, the example configuration files, log files of actual when the actual issue has been reproduced, and then providing that to our level 2 team so that we can quite easily create a defect, an APAR, with our development team so that we can actually have the actual issue resolved. Of course, if there's cases where you're unable to reproduce it in your lab, as you know, can be possible, at that time you can also raise the issue to IBM level 2, but you're also still involved in that, you know, resolution of the problem. You're not just handing the issue to IBM to actually resolve, you will work together with that IBM level 2 team to see where we can reproduce the customer issue together, or provide us with further information from the customer to help us, you know, reproduce the issue, or take it further to the level 3 team. If you now move on to the next slide, we have a call to action. One thing that we would want you to do is, today, the primary site technical contact for each of your end users has a name, someone from your support department. What we would like you to do is ensure that those are all correct for all your customers, and use the details on the slide to actually send an email to the PA help desk to actually have those updated. So what we would prefer is that you have the name of the support manager that you have provided in the contract application form, so that we can actually, you know, understand, okay, that is the support manager of your support team, that is this primary site technical contact for these end users. The next call to action is, one thing that we want to make available now to our support providers is global orientation training. This training is Delta training that we provide to our internal support teams and service teams when new products are made available. So it is Delta type training. So where, for example, you may have a product 7.2, if the next version is 7.3, we will provide the Delta type training to our support teams, i.e. what is the differences between the versions that have been provided and released by development, so that we can quite quickly get our support teams and services teams up to speed on the new functions and debug functions of the new product. So this will be made available to you and to your support teams. And for further information, you can contact myself, where I will provide you with details on how to access the webcast and keys so that your engineers can actually access the training for your companies. Okay, so that is the final slide from myself. I'm going to hand back now to Victoria, and I'm happy to take any questions at the end of the presentation.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dominic.
Thank you.
It's wonderful that we're providing additional training for our support providing partners, just as we provide to our own internal IBM support. So on page 16, if you have not already done so, please fill in and return the application for the Support Provider Reseller Program. We are trying to reduce as much as possible any interruption to business for you as well as for ourselves. We also remind you not to forget your business and marketing plans in that application. The certifications. We are granting a 60-day grace period from the date of your contract execution for you to have the required certifications that Dominic covered. We will be verifying those certifications, and unfortunately, if we cannot verify that those certifications are completed, we will need to terminate that agreement. So I've included in this slide the detailed directions on how to make sure that your certifications are included in your Partner World profile so that we are able to verify that those certifications have been completed. If you have other questions around other areas of the Partner World site, I've included in there the website that gives you the contact information so that you can contact Partner World Services. If we move on to page 17, we have compiled a list of the channel sales contacts for you in the various areas. So you see the contact for the U.S., Canada, as well as for EMEA. And then you see the worldwide contacts there at the bottom of the page. Lamar Murphy is the manager of our group that handles worldwide general business and channel sales. And then Carl Thomason's information, whom you heard earlier during this session. If we move to page 18, I've also included the list of the channel operation contacts. So you have for the Americas, for both the Maximo and Netcool channel partners, and in EMEA, we have included your contacts for the EMEA channel operations group. So you are able to reach out to them if you have any operational questions. Dominic Heath's information is also included here, and then you can see the worldwide team of myself, Michelle, and Lamar Murphy again. So we are at the end of the prepared presentation. We wanted to be sure to save sufficient time for you to be able to ask questions that you might have. And so, Tanya, we would like to now open this up for questions from our audience.
Thank you. At this time, we are ready for the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. One moment. Our first question comes from Jack Locke. You may ask a question.
Yes, my first question is about the presentation, because the way you were doing your presentation, it seems I was missing slides and the order was different.
Did you bring it down from the Partner World website?
Yeah, about 10 minutes ago, or really 10 minutes before we started.
Well, I apologize. We can certainly send you out the correct presentation.
Okay. The second one is about a question I had. Is about 10%. You put in there, let me find it. The 10% uplift for contracts towards our customer each year. Is this also for customers who are already on list price?
No, if Jack, this is Carl. If customers are already at list price, they're already to, obviously, the most we can charge. So list, we cannot charge more than list price.
Yeah, okay. So
we're, you know, at your contractual discount off of list price, then we're at the maximum we can charge. So therefore, you know, it's,
mm-hmm.
can't charge an uplift.
Yeah, okay. But basically, they stay at list price unless the list price changes then. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. So if we have a client where we have a multiple-year contract with for support, is that easily handled by letting that known to our contact? For example, we have a few clients where we have a multiple-year contract with, and this contract states, for example, the percentage of uplift we can use each year. Types like that.
Yeah, if, usually on multi-year agreements.
Yeah.
You know, there is an understanding of what, you know, the price will be for the, you know, the multiple years as well, the uplift. So we will, if we're in the middle of a multi-year agreement right now, we will continue to honor the terms and the agreement of that multi-year agreement until it terminates. So we're not going to be changing anything on that because that was agreed to in the past. We will continue to honor that agreement.
Last question about certifications. All the certifications you're naming for support, are they available at the moment? Because we check the certification page about every week, and this one for support was a new one for me.
Okay, they are available, and that's the link within the deck is will take you to the site where it's available. It's publicly available, and on the page where you can find the certification, it also has a link to the enablement for that as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, clear. Those were my questions.
Any other?
Our next question comes from Shelley Thatcher. Ma'am, you may ask your question.
Oh, actually, Mike Popovich from CreateTech. Subscription and support, people asking what that means. It used to be called annual support. The subscription, they're saying we bought the perpetual license. What does the word subscription in this case mean?
That's a good question, Mike. That was Carl. We've rebranded or retitled renewals maintenance inside of IBM for a very good reason, just to properly identify what our customer and partners are paying for. So the term subscription is, yes, it's the right to that license, but the subscription is more than that. It is the right to download patches, code fixes, bug fixes, and the right to download the latest version or upgrade of the software. So our development teams are continuously not only fixing the versions that are released, but also developing and working on the next release of the software with features and functionality, enhancements, and things like that. The license that is purchased entitles the customer to that latest release. So that is the subscription piece of SNS, or subscription and support. And that is a very important component that often gets overlooked in when we go to sell renewals a lot of times, because a lot of times customers talk about support and things like that, which is important, but there's also another component to that renewal cost, which is the subscription piece, and it's quite expensive, and there's a lot of work, there's a lot of effort, there's a lot of energy that goes into building and maintaining the software. Software is not bulletproof. It's not perfect. It's something that has to be maintained. It's like a house. So we're always maintaining it, always getting to the next version of it. So that's the subscription piece of it. And that's why exactly we title it and term it subscription and support, or SNS, instead of just maintenance, because maintenance really doesn't do it justice with what we're providing here.
Okay, that's great. That explains it. I have a few more questions, if I may.
Sure.
In the past, just what notification is sent to the customer has always been a mystery. Could you elaborate on what gets sent to the customer on renewal, and perhaps what gets sent to the customer upon a new purchase? We don't necessarily see what the customer gets. It's always been difficult. Will that be changing going forward?
Well, in terms of renewal, if the partner, if you are doing the renewal, we send the renewal quote to you, and then obviously you send a quote to the end user. So what we're sending to you is basically the entitlement that the end user has. In other words, what is the names, the product title, the quantity, et cetera, of what they're entitled to. It's the same as if we were doing a direct renewal. It's the same information, basically. So what we're sending is, what exactly, what versions, or not versions, what products and quantities the customer is entitled to, and then the price, of course.
Okay. But the letter actually appears to be going to the customer, and it says, if Mr. Customer, you wish to renew to your business partner, follow these instructions, send this to the business partner, and they will provide the quote. So the letter doesn't necessarily reflect exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, there's also in tandem a letter just as a courtesy that we do to the end user, letting them know their subscription and support coming due. It goes in tandem with the quote that we send out to the partner community as well. That way, both parties are notified that the subscription support is coming due. So it's just basically a notification that it's coming due.
Okay, so this partner to have this information that appears to be going to the customer, giving them instructions on how to renew with the business partner, had our discounted quote in it. So I was hoping it didn't actually go to the customer, but it appears to be a letter that goes to the customer.
Okay, I'll have to check into that, Mike, because I'm...
Please, could you let us know what goes to the customer? We can get a copy of that just so we see, we're aware of it, and what the difference is, what comes actually to us. Because
okay. There
appears to be a bit of a conflict.
Okay, and you're saying that the discount, the amount that... Cause that
yes. Entitlement, as well as our price, our discount price, and all that is a part of this letter. I can send you a copy if you wish.
Yeah, please. I would like to see it, and I'll investigate that, Mike.
Okay, and last question I have is, if the customer is shopping around and they ask IBM for a quote, what price do you quote them? Is it the list price, or how do you determine that?
Well, what we would do is, depending on the scenario, and there's lots of different scenarios in here, but what we would do is we would quote to be competitive as we can with you. So in other words, you know, our objective is not to try to undercut the partners by saying, look, you know, we can do it cheaper, that kind of thing. So what our quote would be calculated to be. And since we don't know what the partner charges the end user, we can only kind of guess, but our objective would be to price it in line with what you would be what the partner would be charging the end user. How we calculate that, there's different kind of scenarios depending on how it was sold and who it was sold through, whether it was a partner or direct to begin with. But, you know, at the end of the day, whatever we would do, we would try and price it so it would be, you know, a level playing field or with what the partner's doing. What we generally do is off bat is start at list price and, you know, go from there. But, you know, as you know, the list price, you know, we quote customers at list price, they say that's fine, but, you know, what's the discount off of that? So at the end of the day, you kind of have to figure out, you know, a number to compete with.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our next question, Matt Logston, you may ask a question.
Yeah, thank you. Here's a scenario. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, here's a scenario that I'd just like to put forward. Let's just say there's an existing Maximo customer who's an FCT customer who purchased the licenses, let's say 100 licenses of base Maximo, and they're under a current maintenance contract, and that was a direct deal, and they're under maintenance contract, as I said. Now they come to a partner, and they say, you know what, we need to get 20 additional licenses, and the transaction goes through. We actually sell them now the 20 additional, so now they have 120. As a part of our obligation in now selling under FCT, we have to offer them at least a level one support. So now a customer's got a fragmented maintenance piece. They've got 100 that they're on contract with IBM and 20 they're on contract with a partner. How do they know who to call when?
Yeah, that's a good question. There's a couple ways we can handle it. You know, number one, you know, we would want to handle this all up front so we get those questions on the table at the time of, you know, renewal and the new license deal and sort of package it so it's consistent. It's either consistent with the partner or consistent with direct. That way it doesn't confuse, you know, the end user. You know, it could be that they might, in some cases, you might want to keep them separate because the new licenses might be, I don't know, let's say, deployed into a different site under a different project for which the business partner is providing, you know, some customization or some work like that, in which case, you know, the partner, you might want to keep them separately. So, you know, there's no one answer that fits all situations here. It's going to depend basically on the deal, the situation, of what's going on. But whatever the case, those questions should be put out on the table at the time the deal is being done. So, you know, pull in the renewals team, field team, et cetera, and we can craft what the most logical solution should be. That way it removes as much ambiguity out of the
possible. Is that Carl?
It's Carl, yeah.
Yeah, so Carl, let's just say we get it out on the table and they decide, yeah, you know what, we want all the calls to go through the partner, okay? So now they want for any of the users, because in the scenario I would give, it's not these 20 aren't for a separate. They are just more of the same of what they're using. They just are trying to make sure they don't run into any kind of a situation where they're using more licenses than they've purchased. So let's just say that it's all put out on the table and they want all 20, 120 to be coming through the partner. Now, IBM's already collected revenue on the first 100. Is there, when we get it all out on the table, is there an opportunity to take some revenue that has already been booked by IBM and then distribute that to the channel if we take on the obligation of supporting the customers who you've already collected payment for?
Yeah, I think you're talking about reallocating revenue, and that's going to be very difficult, if impossible to do. So that's not an option. What I think you're probably talking about is co-terming. So depending on where the new license sale is done during the renewal period, so for example, if the end user has just renewed in January and it's now June and there's a new license deal on the table, what we can do is, you know, if the customer wants to work exclusively through the partner, we can work a deal that will co-term their renewal under whatever date they want to do it. Probably June would be the most logical.
Yes.
So what we would do is charge an extra 6 months to take them to a full year cycle from June, 2009 to 2010, and do some co-terming and pricing accordingly. So that's one way we might be able to handle it. Also depends on, you know, if there's any other renewals out there, we can pull that into the mix. There's, you know, a range of scenarios, but we would do something like that. We wouldn't do any sort of revenue credit or anything like that.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Our next question, Michael Nutt, your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thank you very much. It's kind of a follow-up to both Matt and Mike's call or question. In the case of legacy customers where they are asking a partner to provide that level one and level two support, you stated that the price that would be quoted to the partner would be the same that is quoted to the customer. Now, I don't understand where the discount structure would be in that scenario. If you could elaborate on that, that would be appreciated.
Sure. So, and under the legacy, there was this term of, you know, discount structure for doing, you know, first and second line support, et cetera. And so the way of thinking is like I'm doing first and second line support, so, you know, I get a discount off of that. Well, there's the new contract is set up, and the new thinking is totally different on this, in that there's a standard discount based off of list price for if you're doing first level one support or level two support. If you do level two support, there's a little bit more of a discount. That's the way the contract is set up. It's universal regardless of every scenario. So the thinking is the whole standard is built in right off the bat. Now, operationally, we recognize that if we were to quote to the letter of a contract on that, it would wouldn't allow very many partners to compete very easily. So what we've done is say, okay, if we've had a direct deal, which means that IBM sold the software, IBM provided the discounts, et cetera, negotiated the deal, we are basically the incumbent, so to speak. So we're kind of like under that incumbent partner scenario where new partners want to compete. So in that case, in order to be on a level playing field, and, you know, that since we're getting away from these discount levels on level one, level two, per these deals off of what the customer's already paying direct, we charge the business partner the same price as direct. With the idea being, if an end user wants to move from direct to a partner, the end user probably has a compelling reason. In other words, they see a benefit, they see additional benefit to moving to a partner than continuing the relationship direct with IBM. In other words, I've had end users say, in some situations, I may be better serviced by a partner. They're closer to the ground. They're in the same city for whatever reason. There's some other projects we want to work with the partner, service related or whatever. So in that case, there's a premium that the end user is putting on the relationship with the partner. So then, the partner should be able to add margin to whatever the direct price is, and the end user should be, willing to pay that because that's the whole reason they're moving to a partner. So, that's the thinking behind that.
Okay. If I could get clarification too on, I guess, what the definition of list cost is, because looking through our support contract with IBM, it describes list cost as what's quoted to the customer. So if the customer receives a quote directly from IBM, would that not be their list cost? Same type of scenario as if they received a discounted price, that is now considered their list cost. Is that not correct?
Well, list is list. List is the price for the software, which is the price they would pay direct to partner, whatever. I mean, there's one price list for the software that we have. So there are various discount levels based off of that, but there's one price list. There's one list price. There's one price for the product. I don't know if that answers your question or not, Michael.
That's what was expected. Yes, thank you.
Our next question, Jack Locke. You may ask a question.
Yeah. One of two questions before, they were talking about the letter IBM sent to their clients. What I've asked before in Europe is, if a standard letter IBM uses to explain the 10% uplift they are using nowadays?
I'm sorry, is
there a standard letter of IBM where the 10% uplift each year is explained, we can use towards our customers?
There was a letter that that was sent by the channels team to a number of partners who had contractually, we had to notify before we did any year-to-year uplift, which actually I put together. I can certainly send that to you,
yeah.
And you can forward that to customers. Basically, the rationale behind the 10% year-to-year uplift is to be consistent with the rest of IBM, and this is isolated to Maximo customers. Maximo customers, as you know, were accustomed to 3.6%. It was written in kind of a standard contract agreement.
Yeah.
And it was almost ingrained into people's thinking, which is very standard. IBM's practice when we integrate companies is to standardize them with the rest of the business. So the rest of the business, including new acquisitions we brought in, we automatically, a transfer of business, move to a 10% model, just to be consistent. We do that for a couple of reasons. Number one, that's what we charge in our practices in Passport Advantage. And in the direct model, we move from FCT to move customers to Passport Advantage. Now, for partners, obviously, we stay in the FCT arena, but we don't want to create any pricing disparities where, we have one model for Passport and another model for FCT, which is a flexible contract type. So we need to be standard. Again, not only across all the acquisitions, but standard across the way we do business.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Maximo, we had to be careful because we were sensitive to the fact that the customers were ingrained at this 3.6%. So what we purposely did was kept it at 3.6% for at least 2 years to acclimate, the customers and go. We had a number of other things that we were going through in terms of integration. So, to provide minimal disruption to the business as we could, we kept it, made a conscious decision to keep it at 3.6. That way customers wouldn't be saying, now we're part of IBM, you guys are jacking a price on us, et cetera, et cetera. So what this mainly did was allow us to provide even more time for customers to upgrade to those newer versions that we created, the enhancements that we made to the software 7.1, et cetera, all the industry solutions, spatial, linear, and all these other things. So we enhanced the software, and now we're at a point where we've provided a lot of value-added software into it. We're up to the IBM model now. We've taken the programs to the next level. Now, I can't sort of hold off and be separate anymore and argue against it. So now we leveled the playing field to be, with the rest of the business. Not only that is that we are now offering, since late last year, Passport Advantage. So we can, our new sales of Maximo are be done in Passport Advantage, which is done in renewal at 10%. So we're already down the path of 10%. So we needed to move the FCT business to 10% as well, again to be consistent. So
I understand that.
It's not that we just arbitrarily raise prices. But 10% is our standard practice, and we kept it as bay as long as we could, as what we thought made good sense. But we're to the point now where we've had to make it consistent with the rest of the business. And
I understand that part. That's clear. I have a second question, which is not clear to me yet. For example, in the past, we would have, if somebody bought 10 licenses, they wouldn't get any discount. But if somebody bought, 200 licenses, they would get a big discount. As I understand, Passport Advantage, the more licenses you buy as a client, the more discount you get. How is this handled in the SAT area?
Yeah, the FC Passport Advantage, you're right, is a program that is a volume purchasing program. In FCT is flexible contract type. That's the acronym for FCT.
Mm-hmm.
From an acquisition standpoint, what that means is that's a stepping stone to Passport Advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with partners, we do not have the program. We don't have the Passport Advantage program available right now to partners who offer level 1 and or level 2 support. It doesn't exist. So partners have to remain in FCT. FCT does not have a volume pricing mechanism. Now, this is one thing that we're working to address, but we haven't, it's not ready for market yet. There's areas of the company that have rolled it out, but not in the arena of NetCool and Maximo yet.
That means basically if somebody has 10 licenses for Maximo primary users, they pay 702 euros, I think, in Europe. And if they have 200 licenses, they still pay 702 euros for each license.
Yeah, like I say, FCP does not have a volume-based discount. It's sort of negotiated deal by deal, in a way. So there is no formal mechanism like Password Advantage for FCP, you know, because we're operating under legacy or, you know, what's called non-standard IBM terms, but it's the heritage contract from the other acquisition, which, you know, in many cases, you know, the discounting is varied. So, you know, we have to create a consistent practice. So
I understand that, but basically, in theory, it means that a client who got in the past maybe a discount of, I don't know, 40-50% or maybe a little less, and now they go to a new type of contract where in the end they will pay much more than they would have paid if they were in Passport Advantage, because there's no discount factors.
Our next question, Delia Meanhorst, your line is open.
Thank you. I just had a question because the presentation announces that these are the changes for 2009. And, well, the scenario talks about, well, more years than just one or half a year, because 2009 lasts 6 months. Will the start of 2010 mean that there are more changes to come?
This is Victoria. This program was initiated, as we mentioned, in order to standardize our terms. And as Carl mentioned, we do not have a program at this time within IBM's Passport Advantage system that provides for our support providing partners. We are working on a new program, and it will be part of our mainstream reseller or software program, the Passport Advantage, but it is not something that we can speak about publicly since it has not yet been completely developed. So we are anticipating that we will continue allowing our partners to be able to provide support to our customers. At this time, I cannot say if that will be under this FCT construct or under a different, a mainstream construct, but there will be the provision for our partners to continue providing support.
Okay. But, for example, because you say this will make it easier for partners to estimate future renewals, but it could be that those percentages will change. It's not really that we can estimate it, because it could change in 2010 again.
Well, as Carl mentioned, the 10% is to bring us in line with IBM standard practices.
No, the 10% is in FCP and PA. I mean, the whole reason for the 10% is to, we cap the pricing on the renewal. So IBM carves out subscription and support from every new license deal, whether it's direct or through a partner, and puts the end user on that kind of maintenance already. So it's built into the price. What we do is, instead of in year two, when the renewal comes due, instead of charging list price and then negotiating down from there, we just make the practice of subscription support very easy. I mean, we want customers to stay with subscription and support. There's a lot of value to it, as I mentioned before, with the bug fixes and whatnot. But what we do is, instead of charging list price, we put them on a PAP, which is, there's a carve-out of S&S that's done automatically at the discounted price. Whatever that amount is, we uplift that by 10% every year. So customers can, number one, realize a longer return on investment from the discounted software that they bought in the first place. Number two, that they can predict and budget their renewal costs in the future. you know, I mean, you just take whatever it was last year and you add 10% over that. I mean, it's a straight calculation. Now, if you purchase any additional software in that, you know, that's going to change the mix a little bit. But, you know, for the most part, the renewal done straight itself is a very predicted, budgeted cost. In fact, some end users want to know what their quote is 6 months out, and we quote usually about 3 months beforehand. So what we tell partners is just whatever they paid last year plus 10%, that's going to be what their quote is. I mean, that's going to be our quote to the partner. So, you know, whatever the partner charges the end user, that's up to the partner, but generally, I mean, our quote to the partner is just going to be a 10%. So it's a very budgeted, predicted cost. That 10% uplift is not going to change. We put a cap on that. Again, it's not a cap. I mean, people look at it as an increase. It's not an increase. It's a cap that we put to thou shalt not exceed year to year. So you can realize that return on investment from a longer period of time and budget those annual cycles.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Well, we have time for one last question.
Our last question, Gretchen Gallagher, you may ask a question.
Yes, thank you. The question, I'll give you a scenario and if you could advise on the response. And can you hear me okay?
Yes, Gretchen.
Okay, thank you. So IBM sells Maximo licenses. They choose to go then with a partner the next year. That next year, IBM is the incumbent. The partner would be the new person that is reselling. So they're able to resell to them the subscription for the next year, the partner. The next year, is the partner then known as the incumbent, and do they receive the financial benefits of then being considered the incumbent? Or is IBM always considered the incumbent for the life of those licenses?
No, I think... When we view as incumbent, we look at it just from a year-to-year standpoint. So in your scenario, Gretchen, I mean, if in year two or year three, customer renewed through a partner, and then we're the following year, the partner would be the incumbent because the partner won the business the prior year. So we look at it kind of year-to-year. Also, too, the situation may change year-to-year, too, so that can't really go back to the original purchase because there's a lot that can change in the meantime, a lot of different scenarios and new license sales and projects and things like that can happen. So we always look at it just from a year-to-year standpoint.
Okay, so I greatly appreciate that, but I would like to see some type of documentation that clearly identifies so when we build out our business cases to our clients, so that we can make sure that we then, going forward, whatever the program looks like, will be known as the incumbent to that client. I don't have any documentation that tells me that or that designates that, and that is what I'm looking for.
You're looking for something that says that you're the incumbent if you win the business for that following year, you're the incumbent?
Correct. In other words, the consecutive years, the person that resells the prior year is known to be the incumbent, whether that be IBM or a partner or another partner.
Yeah, I mean,
The terminology I see in a lot of the presentations is about the incumbent. It's not so much of who sold the licenses, it's who's the incumbent.
Right. I don't know if we have any documentation on it per se written to date. That's just a practice on that. I don't know if Victoria, you can speak to it on that in terms of any documentation.
No, I'd have to go look again at the definitions in the contract. But if you need something from us, then we'll look at what kind of documentation we can provide for you.
That would be great. As business partners, we're trying to plan for our clients year over year. If we know that, then if we are able to do business that year with the client, and then we'll be known to be the incumbent going forward, that changes what we can present from a business level. So that is important to us.
No, I understand, and we will work to get a clarification for you.
Okay. So thank you very much for that answer. I appreciate it.
This does conclude the Q&A period. If there are those of you who still have a question, please, you have my contact information in the presentation. This is Victoria McGuire again. Send me an email. If you wouldn't mind, please put Tivoli Talk question into the subject line, and we will work to get an answer from the subject matter experts that you have heard from on this call so that you will not be left with a question that has not been answered. Thank you very much, everyone, for your time and attention during this call, and we look forward to continuing to doing business with you. Thank you. This concludes the call.